Hey, it's Margaret B. with Bicycle Indiana. Welcome back to another episode of Life Behind Bars, where we talk about awesome people that are doing great things across the state in the cycling world. This is another episode that I'm really excited to let everyone who listens know about these two individuals, but there's a really great story that I talk about in this episode, how I met Kevin Krulik as well as Nat, who are two individuals that are working on a really great project in Lebanon, Indiana. And if you've been following Bicycle Indiana on social media, we've been posting updates about a bike park that is being built right now, that is specifically for mountain biking, but also for cross-country running and other different types of activities such as camping, just riding and having fun, or hiking and walking. And it's going to be a really great asset to the state and to bring in people to Lebanon, Indiana, but also just getting people outside and outdoors, right? So really excited for you to listen to this podcast with Kevin Krulik with the City of Lebanon, as well as Nat Lopes, who is a professional trail designer and builder with Hillride, a company that he started. But really, I hope you enjoy this and learn a lot about how bike parks, but also just organizations work with other entities such as county, city, private owners and land to build trails and to build new great things to bring people together and get them outside. So enjoy, and I look forward to hearing what everyone thinks about it. Welcome to the Bicycle Indiana podcast, Life Behind Bars. Still new at this, but I've got two gentlemen on the call today that we're going to talk about a really great park that's being built out in Lebanon, Indiana. And I'm really excited to talk about the park, but also tell kind of the story of how this came to be part of my life, part of Nat and Kevin's life. But first, I'm going to just start off with some introductions, and I'm going to put Nat on the spotlight and have him introduce, and then Kevin.
My name's Nat Lopes, and I'm a park designer, and I helped design the Stone Eater Bike Park.
And where are you out of?
I'm out of California, Marin, Bay Area. I've actually had the opportunity working for IMBA and then with my own company, Hillride. I've actually been able to ride, film, help build trails in all 50 states, 9 Canadian provinces, and 15 different countries.
Very neat. Thanks for being here. Kevin Krulik.
Hey, Margaret.
You want to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Kevin Krulik. I am the city engineer for the city of Lebanon, Indiana. We're just northwest of Indianapolis along I-65. And we're just excited to be building a bike park. And, you know, it's been a little bit of a long time coming. I think we started this with a site visit with Margaret and I and a few others and Nat back in January of 2020. Shortly before the world changed, and it's been a long, long, arduous process of design, permitting, lawsuits, worldwide pandemics, you name it.
Right.
I think we've experienced it here, but we're really excited to be probably less than 2 weeks away from wrapping up construction.
Nice. And I know I told this story to Nat when we were at the park visit last month or whatever. I'm losing track of time. But I met you, Kevin. I remember it was my first like real month with NICA, and we'll kind of talk about what NICA is a little bit in a bit. But I was sitting and it was raining and I was at Brown County and I was trying to recruit who knows what for NICA to get the league going, to get kids on bikes. And you approached me and you said, you want to help me build a bike park. And in my mind, I thought, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do to help this man. But I tried, and look where we are. And we're in this, you know, incredible project together. And it's really great to see it come to life. So first off, is there anything you want to say, Kevin, like specifically of how it started besides that wonderful moment when it was raining at Brown County when you met me?
That was a special moment. you know, I don't think we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for moments like that. You know, if it wasn't for moments like, you know, the HMBA director at that time, Paul Arlinghouse, had, mm-hmm. had told me a couple weeks before I met you that you should talk to NYCHA, and they will be at the Brown County Epic Mountain Bike Festival, which is where we met for the first time. And then, and that introduction to you turned me into meeting the folks at Griffin and getting introduced to Nat. And, you know, so really that was a key moment in this journey is making those introductions and starting to walk down that path with NYCHA, which, we've never regretted. And it's really going to make this a special place. And, equally as special because of the introduction to Nat and what he brings to the table.
Definitely. Yeah. And so for our listeners, I've talked about this on our call a couple of times or our different podcasts. My previous job was working with NYCHA, which stands for National Interscholastic Cycling Association, which is basically a nonprofit out of California that helps states like Indiana start up youth mountain bike leagues that they put on world-class, super professional and super safe and fun mountain bike races for school-based teams. And so you could have a varsity letter sport sometimes at your school for mountain biking or just a middle school club sport. And Kevin is also the leader of one of his teams in Lebanon, which is great. But Nat, you were involved also with NYCHA prior to it coming to Indiana, correct? Oh, you're on mute.
I had the honor of working with NYCHA and Matt Fritzinger, the founder, right, really when NYCHA got started. In fact, it was, you know, the legend of NYCHA is that it was founded by Matt Fritzinger, who is a math teacher mm-hmm. at Berkeley High School. And he was actually really more of a road rider, but he had gone to Europe and was super inspired by the clubs and the teams and just the riding culture out there. He wanted to bring that to Northern California, mm-hmm. Berkeley, to his high school students. And he started, you know, trying to figure it out. It turned out road racing was prohibitively dangerous and couldn't get insurance. But riding on the trails and mountain biking was the through line. So he started a team at Berkeley High School. Pretty soon that spawned another, you know, 5-6 teams that came together. Then they started a league, came up with rules and regulations. Eventually, kind of it caught fire, and the Southern California League started with a big grant from the Easton Foundation. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of the demand just exploded from really all over the country. And it's kind of interesting because having been able to work for the International Mountain Bicycling Association, IMBA, as one of their trail care crews, I had the opportunity to travel all over the United States and work with clubs, land managers, just passionate riders on the ground. And I definitely knew from seeing how energized folks were that this thing was going to blow up. So it was just a fortuitous, you know, turn of events. I met Matt Fritzinger, and pretty quickly kind of we came up with a vision, you know, his whole team. But we came up with a vision for NYCHA, wanted to turn it into a national movement, a national organization, you know, put together the first website and mm-hmm. and funding proposals, got a really huge grant from Specialized, really that was really crucial to kick it off. Now, so many years later, NYCHA's in 26 different states, leagues across the country, and, you know, really exciting, super excited to, you know, basically try to really make this project a national model for NYCHA, you know, knowing what the landscape and the terrain looked like in Lebanon at Stone Eater. It didn't have 2,000 feet of mountains, and it wasn't a gigantic space. It wasn't going to be a Brown County. But what it did have was just a clean slate. We were going to have to do a lot of work in terms of the permitting that we're going to have to go through. It had great viewing. It had the capacity for a large amount of parking, which is one of the biggest restrictors mm-hmm. for horses. And, you know, I think Kevin, who, you know, as a coach, saw the energy from the kids, saw the energy from the league, you know, really identified that there was a great opportunity here. And so, you know, we worked together to put together a vision and a plan. And on October 26th, 2024, the first Nike race will be held out there, which will be exciting. So,
yeah. So let's back up, and I'm going to ask Kevin a couple of questions specifically to the timeline of just the process of all this. But obviously, Nike itself doesn't have an actual specific event venue that is from scratch, completely built on their rules and their, you know, recommendations for trails. And for those that are listening, when Nike comes into a trail system, let's say to host an event, they go through a variety of different steps to determine if the event venue is safe and ready for one, having a lot of riders and spectators and vehicles, vendors, you know, you name it, even down to the safety of where, if a child or a volunteer went down, how can we get to the individual that is hurt? But Kevin, do you want to talk about a little bit of your experience as a coach, but also just as a spectator and as a father, you know, going to a Nike event and your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and Nike does an amazing job at putting down very high quality professional events. But, you know, the inherent difficulty, I think, with a lot of existing trails is that they're, you know, they're not set up as sporting venues. Mm-hmm. And probably more so as a parent than a coach is that, you know, you're there at the start finish line and you know, and maybe there's a 1,000 meters of straightaway or something at the start finish line. But the reality is it's a race to get to the single track in the woods. And then once you get to the single track, you don't see a lot of racing. You don't see a lot of real mountain bike riding. You just, as a parent, you hope and pray that your kid comes out the other end. And hopefully he or she is still on their bike and riding. But you know, there's just a lot of waiting around and, you know, it might be a 20 to 40 minute lap, for your kid before they come out. And, you know, that's difficult and it just doesn't make for really exciting, event watching. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, Nat's touched on it, that really lends itself well at this site. It is a blank slate. There's not a ton of terrain. So we've had to build a lot of our riding features, our riding trails, and that's exciting. So we think it's going to be really dynamic riding, but from a spectator standpoint, you know, if you hike to the middle of the site and stand on the ridge there and you can literally just turn around and see probably 75% of the course that is really built or Nike specific type of racing.
Yeah, right. And Nike specific is cross country racing. And it's very geared toward getting the average recreational rider, the new rider or experience, but the new rider to get involved so that way they can come back and try it again and be part of a team, right?
Right. Right. Yes. It's very much cross country. And you know, that's what we're really proud of is the I just wheeled it off over the weekend, 5.58 miles of stone country trails. You know, and that is really built with the Nike, you know, venue guidelines in hand, understanding what they want to see for their type of racing. But truly it is cross country racing. The trail is probably, it's definitely a green trail. This is not a real high level skill experience type of trail. But we think it's going to be fast and flowy and a lot of fun and super dynamic to ride on and race on and watch. But you know, one of the things that I think has evolved over the last 4 years with Nike is that I think the state leagues are getting more freedom. To adjust their race courses for what, you know, local skill levels and local terrain and local riding looks like.
That's great.
So they, you know, we made a decision a couple of years ago that if we were only going to do the cross country trail, that we were missing out on a big segment of the riding population. So we put in, 4 additional little skill trails, a little skill
loops. That big rock that I saw Nat fly over like nothing.
And so we built these other trails so that, you know, the venue can attract riders of all skill levels.
Yeah.
And then it's really exciting to hear Nika say that, you know, from year to year, they may change up the course and use some of those skill trails for riding as well. So
let's back up a little bit, because you know, your marketing, I guess, manager or person who runs on Joe, he's done a really great job and has a bunch of podcasts that he recorded with videos and information about like the timeline and the different status updates. But let's back up, because the first time, you know, you really kind of opened this idea to the public was this community like meeting. And I remember being in this room with, I don't know, whether like 40, 50 people in there. And there were people that were super excited that were mountain bikers like us that are like, yeah, we're getting this awesome trail on an old, what, landfill or, you know, and then you got, you know, one or two individuals that Nat, I always say, Nat, you're the man. You handled those community members that were not happy about it. And do you want to talk, Nat, a little bit about how, you know, individuals that see this project and they don't always see that it's a good thing, and how to talk them through and how you work with the community?
I mean, with every project, you know, it's always good to expect there's going to be some people that aren't, you know, as excited about it as you might be. The first thing is to try to listen to what the concerns are, you know, cause there are legitimate concerns, you know, like noise and traffic and, you know, all that stuff is legitimate. So, you know, the first thing is to try to listen and figure out what they're actually concerned about. And then obviously, you know, mitigate what you can. You know, different projects takes different things. You might put up a different kind of fence or some vegetation planting if, you know, viewscape or visibility is a concern. You know, traffic, you know, there's different ways to configure parking lots or, you know, where your entry exit might be. So, you know, trying to figure out how you can mitigate any of those issues. And then also, you know, sometimes, people are just batshit crazy and you can't do anything to appease them, you know.
You did great when I watched you.
I believe in this case, there was some concern about cyclists being homosexuals, being rampant arsonists. And I believe one of the local neighbors was concerned that the mountain bikers would throw rocks at their horses.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember horses.
You know,
don't forget drug use.
And drug use. Some concerns you can, mitigate and plan for. And others, you know, are you know, kind of unfair and you can't do much about. Right. But, you know, in this case, one of the neighbors had equestrian paddocks and horses, beautiful ranch, and we really made sure to keep our trails out of the immediate sight line of the horses, because for sure, especially when you're training and breaking a horse, they spook, they scare. If they see strange things coming out of the bushes or kids whooping it up, they'll have an impact. So, you know, we were very careful to pull the trails back, provide a buffer, and, as much as possible, mitigate that impact. Even routed some of the trails kind of further away from some of the existing residences, just to create a buffer and be a good neighbor. If you were living there, you'd want that accommodation probably made for yourself. So
absolutely. Well, speaking of, go ahead, Kevin.
I was just saying, you know, that neighbor actually that was most vocal. I don't think his concerns were necessarily with mountain bikers specifically. I think he just had some fears about a park that was a little bit outside of city limits along a highway and what kind of activity that might draw.
Right.
I've had really great interactions with him ever since. He even came up to me at our local farmer's market week before last and said that, he had been out there. He had walked the trails. He had taken his UTV around. He was very impressed with what we were building. Thought we were doing a great job.
That's great.
And I think he's done a 180 where he's actually, looking forward to living next to a park as opposed to the former landfill.
Sure, sure. So speaking of like design, Nat and Kevin, you kind of both touched on this. Speaking of timeline as well, like how did you, after the community, you had a map already designed and an idea of what the park was going to look like. How do you even start that process? I don't know who wants to take that one.
Well, I mean, I guess you were there for those first that first site visit and inspection.
Lost in the woods or in the field, but
yeah. Well, that's part of it. Getting lost, exploring the terrain, really getting boots on the ground. Figuring out where the swamps are. Where the rock escarpments are, where the fence lines are. You certainly have to get on site and get lost and walk around. So that's really the first step. You find your opportunities, your constraints, your positive control points, negative control points. For this site, there's only one way off the highway. So the entrance into the park area was pretty obvious. Where the parking should probably be staged was, super obvious. So that kind of gave you your start point. You knew where people would be entering and starting, their experience out at. So that's kind of the first thing to figure out. And then we kind of had the park, as it turned out, sort of has the Great Meadow, which is sort of the center of the park. And then really the forest and the tree lines, ring sort of the outside of the park. So it kind of, broke it into sort of two different feels. And knowing that we wanted to do, cross-country trail, we had, for NICA, knowing the amount of elevation and terrain, which, given that it's pretty moderate, we knew that, a trail course that would give a good lap time and make it accommodating. We knew the mileage we wanted to hit, which was about 5 miles. So, how do you stack 5 miles up and then also trying to add a little bit more variety with the skills trails, kind of break it down and analyze it that way. I think we came up with a good plan, right from the start. And, I think every step of the way, with these projects, sometimes you work with a city, county, municipality, land manager, and, they're not interested really in participating at all. And they just say, kind of do it. And they are hands off. But it definitely, like this project, it's great when you have an engineer like Kevin, who, is a rider himself, is a coach, is a parent with kids that ride. Was really dedicated to getting out on the land, making sure every last little piece of the project that, was proposed and conceptualized was going to work on the ground. And then this project also had a huge permitting component, which much respect to Kevin for, staying focused, and really putting time to execute the final permitting and construction documents to be able to be approved. Those are kind of the steps to figuring out how to.
Well, I remember standing in the field, not understanding anything that you were doing and thinking, this is going to be a bike park, and look at it now. Right. So two kind of questions, and I think this can go towards Kevin too, but you also, Nat, when I saw you the last time in person, you said something and I wish I recorded you, but, talking about how the different entities all work together, and you described it really great where you had, the city and the county, and then obviously you're a business that's contracted doing the work, and then you hire people that, for example, working on the pump track. But I guess what I could say, or what could you say about how different organizations work together on a project like this, and how does that all kind of fit together really well? That's, I think I worded that right.
Each project is different, first of all. So really in that early stage, the feasibility study stage, figuring out what agencies are going to be involved.
Right.
And quite frankly, what to be helpful, and interested. Sometimes it's really easy as a government employee, which, you know, most government agencies are, you know, pretty well going at their operational limits, and any additional projects, you know, is usually, you know, an opportunity cost for them. They're going to have less time to work on other projects, less budget. And sometimes, you know, an agency might be on board, but the individual personnel might just not be that interested, or, you know, in worst case scenario, against, you know, not really in favor of the project. So figuring that out early on is really important. And then, you know, trying to create a situation where all of the agencies can participate, can come out, you know, with what they need ultimately in the end. And, you know, I think in this case, there's the Capital Division, or the Engineering Division, of which Kevin is part of, and then there's the Parks Department, which is sort of the second entity for the city, and really trying to get you know, both of those. Usually, what happens, or unfortunately, what happens a lot, is a project will be developed. You know, you'll have the capital people going, "Oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be great." They develop plans. They, you know, put out project bids. You know, they hire a contractor, the contractor works on it for a year, the project is built, it looks beautiful, and then it's like, okay, and they turn over to the, you know, the Parks Department, or the folks that are gonna have to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, worst case scenario, they haven't been involved, they don't know what they're, you know, they don't know how to maintain it, they don't have the skills or the expertise or the equipment or the budget,
right?
And they're like, you know, it's really just a nightmare for them. Like, oh my God, how are we going to handle this? So It's important. It's not easy, because, you know, usually most Parks Department, or the folks that are going to be doing the maintenance, they already have, you know, their portfolio of parks that they're managing. They already have their fields that they need to be mowing. They already have their, you know, bike paths that they need to be maintaining. And usually, you know, it's an extra project. It's pretty rare that there's, you know, guaranteed maintenance funding or operation funding that comes with a project.
Right.
You know, but the more you can get them involved so they know what's happening, you know, they can provide input. So, you know, if you can put a maintenance area here, or, you know, not put something there, it'll make it so that instead of, you know, so that when they come in and dump the trash and check out the restrooms, it takes 5 minutes instead of having to enter two gates and it taking, you know, half an hour. That makes a big difference over the course of a year.
Right.
Those are some of the kind of the key pieces, but I'd really have to, you know, defer most of that to Kevin. You know, I work remotely. I'm consulting to Kevin, but Kevin is the one that has to, you know, wade through the you know, requirements with the county, with Parks Department, in this case with IDEN, Indiana Department of Environmental Resources, for all the permitting. And then this project as well, Kevin's done an amazing job of reaching out to and working with the Illinois Miami Tribal Nation.
Yeah, I want to talk about that later.
Which is part of the WIA tribe. And, you know, each one of those steps and communications, you have to do education. You have to have a lot of patience, and you know, you just got to grind it out and put the time in too. So,
right. So Kevin is a city engineer, but the park is on county land that will be then managed by the Parks Department, correct?
Well, the park is on city land. It's a former landfill that the city owned.
Okay.
The landfill was outside of city limits. So that added some nuance to this, that it was not within the city's planning jurisdiction. It fell within the county's planning jurisdiction. But it will be on city owned land. It will, for now, it will still be outside of city limits, but it will be a city ran park.
Okay.
Operated by our Parks Department. And, you know, they've been in there, willing to learn more about this. I think they're very nervous right now as to what it's going to take to maintain a bike park. We've taken visits to Griffin Park to show them that, to talk to the land managers there. We're having a training session for parks and public works staff on Thursday this week with Nat and the park builders, so they can understand what to look for, what to be concerned with, problem areas, things they need to think about when you're maintaining a mountain bike trail. Whether those are our stone trails or the natural surface trails, there's always nuance to that. But I think they're cautiously optimistic that they can do this. And I think we've got a lot of people that have came out to that have expressed interest in volunteering for park maintenance.
Yeah. And we have other parks around the state that I feel have some potential examples and help that could help, you know, Griffin Bike Park, for example, by me in Terre Haute, and Nat, you worked with them as well, but they, you know, it's ran by the Vigo County Parks Department, and Rich is a manager that is paid by, you know, the Parks Department, and then he hires or he works himself out on the trail systems and has work days for volunteers. So I'm hoping that that can be a great resource as other parks around the state. But my next question for you, Kevin, is I know that this might put a little bit of salt in your wounds, but what are some of the biggest struggles that you've had? And I know one of them was you had to have a lawsuit, unfortunately, right? And I'm going to shut up now so you can talk.
There's been a lot of struggles, you know. We've touched on IDEM, and that was a big one, and that probably took 2 years of this last 4 years of time to go through all the nuance there of basically opening up an old closed landfill and talking about what they would refer to as an adaptive reuse. But that, you know, was at least there was a roadmap, there was a finish line. The nuance though, with the park being outside city limits and under county jurisdiction, when we went to apply for permits to build the park, we were denied and said, oh, you need a special use exception. And we respectfully disagreed with them and cited their ordinance instead that this is a park within a residentially zoned area is permitted by right use. And they kind of said, well, we're not sure this is a park. You know, they heard us talking about NICA and events and sports venues and things like that. And we're like, well, yeah, but it's no different than any city park that hosts events. It doesn't mean it's an event venue just because it has the ability or it was designed with that intention. Because 363 days out of the year, this is a public open to the public park, and with no admission fees or no membership related hurdles to jump through. So, we did have to ask for judicial review for their denial of the project.
You said that so politely.
Yeah, and that took about a year just waiting to get on the docket with the judge. And it had a change of venue because our local judges didn't want to settle an argument between the city and the county, which don't blame them. But, you know, when we finally got in front of the judge, the ruling was very fast, very swift, 99% in line with the arguments that the city had made. So it really helped. I think it made us feel pretty good that we were in the right path and the right understanding of the law.
Yeah.
The judge basically accepted all of our arguments and made those part of his judgment. And so we were off and running then, and you know, that really had paused the IDEM permitting. And fortunately, there was about another 2 years about IDEM permitting before we were ready to go to construction, which was last summer, 2023, before we were to start.
I will say your mayor is incredible. I mean, you are incredible too, Kevin. I think you and Matt Gentry are just partners in crime to get stuff done and bring in recreational outdoor activities, if I'm putting that to the area.
That's been, I think, a hallmark of his administration. And I got to give him all the credit, you know, that he's been all about quality of life, quality of place, activating our park systems, connecting trails, expanding trail networks throughout the city. And the bike park is just another one of those things that you know, that we're excited to be able to offer people. It's another way to get people outside, get kids off couches, off of screens, and yeah. out on a bike and more active.
Right.
And, you know, so that just really fits hand in glove with the vision that he's set forth, and he's great to work for. He sets visions and allows us to go out and execute those visions. And that's what we've been doing here. He's been incredibly supportive. He's not a mountain biker. He's not a cyclist at all.
Yet.
But, you know, it didn't take much convincing that, you know, this is actually a direction that a lot of forward-thinking parks departments and park systems are going.
Yeah.
You know, at the time when we first started kicking this idea around, there weren't a lot of public mountain bike trails in city parks throughout the Indianapolis area. There's a lot in state parks, but not a lot in city parks. And we've seen that flourish over the last couple of years, you know, so we hoped you'd be the first, you know, but in the last 4 years, we've seen a lot of other cities develop mountain bike trails, you know, and so that's exciting. And I think it's just a testament to his willingness to understand where outdoor recreation is going. And, you know, what we tell people now is like, you really can't watch social media, television, and not see mountain biking, even in advertisements and commercials that have nothing to do with cycling. You see images of people on mountain bikes and people mountain biking. And that's exciting. I think that's where outdoor recreation is really going. It's probably one of the biggest trends I think we're seeing in the parks world right now.
Well, and the park you also isn't just always all for mountain biking. I mean, you can hike. You might host cross-country running events right there. There's camping potential, right?
Camping's difficult because of the landfill and the regulations there. We've literally had to put that in writing that we will not allow camping over the top of where there's buried trash. So it's a little bit of a sore subject. I wish we could. We fought for that for a while and ended up having to abandon those arguments. But there's going to be so much more to the park, whether it's hiking, walking, trail running, taking your dog on walks out there, picnicking, you know. And yes, we've been talking to the local high schools about possibly holding cross-country running events out here.
Yeah.
You know, that's something where we'll be continuing to have those conversations with them in the near future.
That's great. Yeah, because I have Laverne Gibson out here, which is a nationally known cross-country event. And I went over there the other, you know, a couple years ago, and I thought, oh my gosh, this would be a great NICA event. And then I thought, oh wait, they don't want that. But Nat, what struggles on your end? Did you have anything that, you know, that were just kind of tough?
The lawsuit, you know, certainly, I have a pretty good track record in the projects I've worked on. Partly I'd like to consider maybe from skill, but then there's also a lot of luck. Like project in California, where there was a member in the community that just made, she had just graduated from, she didn't like the project that was near the property, and she just made FOIA request after FOIA request for, you know, a year and a half, and threatened lawsuits. And unfortunately in that one, the Parks Department just like was overwhelmed, you know, by the sixth time that they had to print out every email correspondence document related to the project, and had a, you know, an 8-inch binder of information that took, you know, literally 20 hours to assemble and probably cost, you know, $5,000 to deliver. You know, the Parks Department, they gave up. They just didn't have it in them. The Parks Council, we had unanimous approval at the beginning of the project. Parks Council changed over, and it got stalled and ultimately died on the vine. Luckily, you know, that doesn't happen too often, but certainly this one, I'd never seen two governmental agencies that theoretically are both working on behalf of the citizens to provide services, including parks and recreation. I definitely had never seen a lawsuit between two entities like that.
But in Lebanon, Indiana.
Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the entertainment venue designation that they wanted to attach to the bike park put us in the same category as a strip club, in terms of like, you know, community response.
It definitely put us in a different category, but.
That could have killed, you know, for a mayor, you know, if the mayor wasn't as committed, quite frankly, if Kevin and his staff weren't as committed, that could have killed the project. One of the biggest things with projects is just project lag. It just kills momentum. It's so hard to keep things rolling. Sure. The hurdle of the lawsuit and then the item process, which just took a really long, it's a very technical project. It's a really big site. And the mitigations that were required for the permitting included, you know, clear cutting of the forest that had grown up, which was 80 acres. It included bringing in over 100,000 tons of fill dirt to improve the cap. It included the installation of four deep groundwater monitoring wells, which each one of those components was extremely technical, you know, cost a tremendous amount of money. And even just bringing in the dirt just for scale, when I was there for one of my site visits, I actually had my watch out and there was an end dump, 40-foot truck of dirt coming in every 58 seconds. And that happened for weeks and months. In order to do that fill import. So this is really but it's easy to come to the site now and be like, what's the big deal? It's, an open meadow, and there's some forest and there's, some terrain that's built, what's the big deal? But just the scale of the project is huge. Even the seeding, just to stabilize the soil and seed the ground for vegetation, is $100,000 right there. Sure. So those are struggles. And then the other one is, the vision, when you're designing something, you kind of have to, you work hard to establish a vision. You hope the vision makes sense, Right. And then there's a whole bunch of keeping with it and making sure that the vision happens. And, this one, realizing the work that was going to have to be done for the landfill, the previous experience working on the Griffin Bike Park, which is an amazing facility. I poured my blood, sweat, and tears into that project, along with the literally thousands of volunteers that worked on it, the dedicated county representatives, the Friends of Griffin Bike Park group, the Shepherds of Griffin Bike Park volunteers, the Griffin family, the bike park manager, Rich Edwards, the tremendous effort and lift that project was, And the dynamic terrain that is there. But the hardest thing about that project that was just brutal in construction, in event production, every critical step of the way, it seemed like Indiana provided a surprise rainstorm.
Right.
And 2 or 3 inches of rain that fell right before, whatever it was we wanted to do. The real learning experience from that, was it rains a lot. It rains, year round. And if you're really trying to plan events, races, competitions, and you want a venue that is, weatherproof or weather resistant, it was like, oh my gosh, well, here's the opportunity to do that. How do we create, trails on super moderate terrain that are flowy and interesting? And, could we actually create a trail system that, we could actually race in the rain?
And you did that at Stone Eater.
Yeah. So that was the goal at Stone Eater, was to develop the trail system to be all weather. And even, you know, through construction, you know, I get progress photos from Kevin and Pump Tracks USA, the builders out there. And, you know, Monday they'll send me a picture and all you can see is the white stone trail, you know, in a sea of water. And then, you know, probably by Wednesday or Thursday, it might be dried out. Really the opportunity to do something out of the box and to build an all-weather trail system that we used crushed concrete, white stone rock to build the trails. We built all the trails 12 inches proud or above grade of the existing ground level, so that number one, they drain really quickly. Number two, they're a very hard, durable material. And then number three, the water can't even actually get to the level of the trail tread itself. Mm-hmm. But you know, quite frankly, that was kind of a crazy idea, or at least it was a pretty lofty vision and goal at the start of this project. And, you know, all the way through, it was like, well, are we really going to do this? How are we really going to get that much material? Are we really going to have the builder come in and lay the stone this way? And, you know, I give props to Kevin because, again, he stuck through the lawsuits, he stuck through the permitting, and gosh darn, you know, we have a 5.6 mile trail system that when every other race venue, riding area, trail system in the region is going to be rained out, flooded, and not open for racing, Stone Eater Bike Park is. And I think it's going to really have a huge impact in the region. So,
oh, absolutely.
Super exciting. But yeah, just that staying, sticking to it is a hard thing to do. And
oh, I'm sure.
And it's working. I've ridden the trail when you're surrounded by standing water, waiting for it to drain through the drainage system. And it's hard. It's compacted. You're not
nice.
So yeah, I mean, realistically, we will not close the park for weather reasons.
Whoa, that's big.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if there's a foot of snow on the ground, you might not be able to see the trail, but
bring those fat bikes.
If you can see the trail, you can ride the trail. You can ride the trail in the rain. We're actually building, which I think is kind of innovative. I'm really excited to see how it works out. Like, we're going to have these retractable closing gates at the natural surface trails, the skills trails, that we will have to close off with our park staff, you know, for wet weather, just like any other natural surface trail in Indiana. But the cross country trail will be open all the time.
That's great. So we talked about this a little bit earlier, and I want to make sure we discuss it, but the name of the park, Kevin, do you want to talk about the importance and how you picked it, and you spoke to the tribe, correct?
Yeah. We had a couple different names. This is, I think, our third or fourth name that we had came up with. You know, first we were just going to, the generic name we started with was Lebanon Bike Park. And there's a Lebanon Bike Park in Lebanon, Ohio. And we really wanted to capture and create something that is going to be regional. And so we really wanted something that was unique, that would not be confused with any other place. So we went away from that. We looked at Prairie Creek Bike Park, which is adjacent to the park, but you know, there are Prairie Creek trails over in the Columbus, Indiana area. So we didn't want to do that again. We want this to be a unique destination. And I started looking through history books and found some references to a chief by the name of Chief Stone Eater. And immediately, that's just a cool name for a mountain bike park, but especially given the idea that we're building out of stone, or we're building these white rock, these white stone trails. We started researching the history. Chief Stone Eater was a chief of the Wea people, kind of based just west of here. But he also was the war chief under the Tecumseh Confederacy, which was you know, and Indiana was the last really sort of great confederacy of indigenous people. And so that's neat to be able to celebrate him and that history. You know, he's a really noteworthy individual, was a confidant and advisor to President William Henry Harrison. So there's just a lot of really unique and interesting history there. And so we're just excited to be able to celebrate that. And it took us a while to actually get in touch with the right people to make sure we were doing things the right way. And so we have the tribal authorization to use the name. And that is the Peoria Tribe of Oklahoma, which is the federally recognized tribal entity that encompasses the Wea people. That was over a year process. You know, that's negotiating with another sovereign nation. That was not as straightforward as I thought it might be. We're really excited and really proud to be able to put that name out there and put that history out there. And we're still working with them to make sure that we're paying respects properly. In fact, we have a meeting tomorrow to talk about authentic indigenous vocabulary and using that to name the trail systems. So,
no, that's great.
Yeah, really, really excited to celebrate that.
So next question, because I want to make sure to keep you on time, Kevin. I'm going to turn my video off because my internet is not doing great. Okay, so current status. I've had multiple people ask because I kept posting pictures of the little site visits we've had. Is it open to the public right now? Can people go or what's no, not
it's
open to
not
the public.
It's not open to the public. I think we will be done with trail construction I'm hoping if weather cooperates and that's right. You mentioned that earlier. We seem to get rain every week this year. It's been an unusually wet year. So assuming, though, we can get some good weather to finish construction, we should be done with trail construction in the next 2 weeks.
That's great.
We have a lot of a prairie and turf grass seeding that we need to do that we're also getting geared up for. And that's to try to make sure the park is stabilized and ready to host that first NICA race in October. So I think we will have the grand opening is set for October 25th. That's the Friday before we get to the NICA weekend. And I think we will have a soft opening sometime, I guess, between September and October 25th. But I really can't speak to exactly when that'll be. It'll have to be a game time decision. We're not going to open it till we know things are safe, till the trail is completely constructed, till the signage is all in, the informational signage is in, and that we know that we can safely open it to the public. So I'm hoping sometime in September there'll be a soft opening. But what I am confident of right now is that in October 25th, we will have the grand opening. We'll have the NICA weekend right after that. And then come that Monday after NICA, leaves the site, it'll be open to the public as a public park.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. But I know we get a lot of requests of when are we going to be able to ride, when. I hope it's sooner rather than later. But
right.
You can't open it till it's right.
So how can people get involved, you know, if they want to volunteer or donate or?
Yeah, I would say if you go to the city's website or the city's Facebook page, actually both, you can link to there is a Stone Eater Mountain Bike Park, www.stoneeatermountainbikepark.com, that you can go to and get information. Where we put most of the information out there is through the Facebook page. So there is a Stone Eater Bike Park Facebook page. That's where you mentioned this earlier. Joe LePage, our great communications director, has forced me for the last 2 years plus to do a video every month
documenting
the progress, which at some points the progress was, hey, look at this new rock someone donated. But I'm happy to report that, you know, the progress videos are getting a lot more exciting. But if you go to our Facebook page, I think that's where we'll make announcements. That's where you'll see information about the grand opening, where you'll see information if there is a soft opening ahead of time. So that's the best place to get updates. And there also were call out postings on that page, looking for people that might want to help volunteer down the road. And all those people that responded to that call out, we've actually invited to our first trail maintenance workshop that we're having.
Nice. Nat, you want to say anything about anything we've kind of talked about?
Let's see. I guess, yeah, maybe a little bit more just about the course and the racing in terms of having it be dynamic. You know, one of the things that is really cool about the course is that it actually has passing lanes almost every half mile, so that, you know, the racing is super dynamic. The visibility is huge. The parking capacity, you know, we programmed it so, you know, there can literally be 1,000 cars on site, 1,500, you know, athletes racing. So those are some key pieces. I said Illinois Miami Tribal Nation previously, which was a mistake. That it's the Illinois Miami language of the Peoria tribe.
Oh, okay.
So we've been working on we've kind of named all the trails after the ecosystem representatives, the animals, and so we've been providing all those. We'll provide, the goal is to provide all those trail names in the native language that Chief Stone Eater spoke, to kind of tie in that cultural history a little bit more. Yeah, I think that probably yeah. covers most of it.
Well, from my experience, I'm putting on NICA events and running the league for about 3-4 years. Is I know you got the party, which is where all the kids are going to race, all set. You got the poopers, which obviously the porta potties, room for that. And then the parking. That's what they taught me, party poopers and the parking. And it sounds like everything is coming together, which is really exciting. I know we want to keep on time for Kevin here, but one last thing and then we'll end the call. Are there any good big surprises that were like exciting? I think I remember you getting dirt donated. Is that something that we can, or, you know, I don't know if we have enough time, but maybe we could quickly, somebody could say a big surprise that was really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, that was something we really needed. The project has just escalated over the years. I want to say that when we first started kicking around this idea, before Nat was even involved, I think I had thrown out a budget of $300,000 or $400,000 to our city council for a parking lot and a trail. And, you know, and that morphed into this idea of creating this regional hub, this training facility, this race venue. And that has morphed into larger and larger budgets. Then you couple in all of the IDEM requirements, including thousands of yardage of, I think it was Nat said 100,000 tons. That's about right. And luckily, we were able to get that for free, but we had to pay to shape that dirt, and we had to pay for the groundwater monitoring systems that had to go in, and all those things were extra costs that we had not really anticipated. So really, the project came down to two projects. One was sort of the fortification of the environmental asset, which is the landfill, and then the construction of the park. And construction costs since 2020 have also went through the roof. So
like everything, yeah.
Yeah, we've been lucky though. I mean, the park is really paid for with I'd say four main pots of money, and one is American Rescue Plan money, the Ready 1.0 money. So these are grant monies that we got from the state, the feds. We've had a lot of private donations involved in either materials or monetary donations. And then the last one is because it was a former landfill, we had some old operating monies sitting around from when we closed the landfill that we were able to utilize towards. So I have a report, you know, we haven't had to issue any financing. We haven't had to increase taxes. We've been able to pay for this entire park through existing funds on hand or grant funds that we acquire.
That's incredible. Well, I want to make sure that you leave at 4. So I'll drop information in the link to the website and the Facebook page and kind of direct our listeners to your website and social media. But I appreciate you two being on the call. I really, really am excited about all this work that you're doing and excited to be part of it and thrilled to see you possibly this week at the site. So thank you again, and I'll edit this and get it out to our listeners and people can learn more about the park.
Really excited. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks so much, Margaret.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.